The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, my fine feathered finks. What's going on? Kevin Goatee here, gutting the sacred cow. I just finished recording a fantastic episode. Oh, why? Well, nothing. Nick Whitmer rejoins me as co-host, but guess who decided to bring the heat? Bill Schultz returns with his buddy Brad Morris. Remember Brad? Of course you do. He did Hateful Eight, and of course you know Schultz. They wanted a tag team and try and take down the mega classic Home Alone. Oh boy. Tis the season. Before we get to it, don't forget guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com if you want to advertise with us. And we love to share our 5-star ratings, 2 or 3 sentence reviews on your podcast platform of choice. Cannot thank you enough for that. Without further ado, it's time to see if Bill and Brad can take down Home Alone.
I'm a star. I'm a star. I'm a star. I'm a star. I'm a big, bright, shining star. Nick Whitmer, guest co-host tonight. What's up, pal?
That was a direct quote from me in the waiting room before the show started. As my affirmations, trying to get ready, you know.
Can you name?
I'm good.
Can you name what quote that movie is from?
I'm a star. 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 Is that how many stars, or there's another one?
Four I'm gonna guess. And then I'm a big, bright, shining star.
I'm going to guess A Star Is Born.
You know, that'd be too easy and obvious, right? No, it's not.
Lady Gaga doesn't say that in that movie? Are you sure?
No. We're going to Bill Schultz. Fan favorite of the show. I thought this was
Boogie Nights, obviously.
Yeah, it is Boogie Nights, Bill. Very good.
Yeah, come on.
Bill, one of the few guests to get the quotes, I would say like 60, 75% of the time consistently.
Because I'm a virgin, and I have a lot of time to watch stuff, yeah.
Well, virgin, welcome back to Gutting the Sacred Cow. We have ourselves a humdinger. By the way, this is not just a two-on-one. This is a two-on-two, as Bill's pillow-biting friend from days of yore, Brad Morris, rejoins the show. Brad, remember him? Brad did the Hateful Eight not long ago. Bill said, guess what? I would have come back and do Home Alone, but I want to bring Brad Morris. I said, you bet your ass. So let's do it. Two on two tonight.
We both grew up in John Hughes territory. Yeah, we have to do it.
Brad, welcome back. How have you been, pal? What's new and exciting?
Oh, I'm so happy to be back. And yeah, just to lean heavily on Bill, you know, when it comes to talking about this movie, but everything's good. I'm actually in Chicago right now. There's a blizzard. It's a blizzard, but I think it's going to be like 5 inches of snow, and it's cold. I don't know how that's any different than most days for the next 4 months here.
Ironically,
I was going to say, I hope everyone was sitting for that Chicago brainbuster.
Yeah.
The weather is horrible.
That's right.
In December.
Is there an ominous old man shoveling snow in front of your house?
Old man Marley misunderstood. He's just outside now. I'm going to go give him a hug at church in a little while.
Good.
The aforementioned Home Alone is the choice film today. How timely with the holiday season upon us. Home Alone, a budget, 1990, by the way, fellas. Budget, $18 million. A box office haul of $476.7 million.
Insane.
And turn that to 2022 money. Get ready for this shit. Budget, $39.3 million. Box office haul, $1.04
billion. Wow.
That is end game money we're talking here, fellas. I don't remember. I knew it was big. I didn't know it was that big.
It's also undeserved money that we're talking about. Guns are fired.
Guys, you've been on, all of you in this podcast before at least once. Can we at least pretend to keep a poker face before we know,
before
we show our hands? I'm talking to you, Nick Whitmer. IMDb, fellas, is a scale 1 through 10 with decimal points. I tell you what, Brad, why don't you take a stab at it? What do you think IMDb has for Home Alone?
Wow. Am I doing it down to the tenths, or am I just
yes, tenths?
I bet it's at an 8.8.
Bill Schultz.
And for the record, in high school, Brad and I were not known for our math.
True.
He called it the tenths, though. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
You like that?
Yeah, it was good.
Not known for math or master coxmanship either.
Mm-hmm.
True.
So me too. I was terrible in high school. Bill, what number was your number? What do you have for Home Alone on IMDb?
Actually, Brad did really well as far as pussy is concerned in high school. Oh. But as far as the number, all right, Brad, what was yours again?
It helps just to have a girlfriend. I think that was kind of
yeah. What was your number again?
I said 8.8. I don't know.
All right, yeah, I'm just gonna go like 8.5, so I can get anything below that.
I'm gonna go 9.3.
You guys all blew your load. 7.7.
Whoa! That means I win. Your side.
I mean, Schultz wins. Let's kick it off to we'll go to Bill Schultz now. Critics' Rotten Tomato score, as we all know, 1 through 100. Bill, what did the critics say about Home Alone?
Oh, 70%.
70. Nick Whitmer.
69%.
Ah, you took it from me.
Brad Morris.
I guess I got to go 71. Is that what happened?
I hate you.
You can, but Nick Whitmer is going to pick this one off. 66% for the critics.
Okay.
We're going to kick it off now with Nick Whitmer. What did the audience give Home Alone?
It's gonna be up there. Yeah, I'd say 84.
Brad Morris.
I guess I gotta go back to what did I say initially? Yeah, that's too high. I'll bring it down to 86.
Bill Schultz.
I mean, I guess I'll go 90 because I like never underestimate the stupidity of the viewing public.
80 for the audience.
Is that me again?
That is you again.
Oh, yeah. Nick, you win.
A little more celebratory tones for the man. He did just pull out two out of the three.
I lost. I'm not gonna fucking celebrate that.
Quotes. Look what you did, you little jerk. The ubiquitous Buzz, your girlfriend. Woof.
It's on sweatshirts now, I think.
Yeah. Keep the change, sweater. You filthy animal. That one's gotta be the top one of this film. Or you guys give up? Oh, you're thirsty for some more. Ironically, uttered by Bill Schultz as he's on the receiving end of a glory hole.
Why? Come on.
Factual.
Although I do go to the Port Authority a lot, let's be honest.
How about, Brad, any quotes about you in this film, or did I take them all for myself?
You know, I think one of the underrated things about this movie, or you know, not often talked about is the whole storyline with everyone going to Paris or to France, which is just, it could have been, they clearly were like, well, it needs to be a far enough away place that it's hard to get home. But I think one of the, 14 siblings that Kevin McAllister has, by the way, I'm not positive about this, but at one point in those early scenes, you can't tell if who's a cousin, who's a sibling. And I think we don't see some of these kids a second time. But the sister at some point says, Kevin, you are what the French call Les Incompetents. Mm-hmm. I think it was such a shitty thing, and it really stuck with me. What an asshole the sister was.
Yeah, right?
Well, God, that was like one of the few funny moments, though. Oh, that was like, I kind of giggle with that. Yeah, yeah.
I like all the highbrow stuff, Bill.
you know that actress rehearsed that in her trailer 85 times because that was her only line.
Good. That's right.
I loved a lot about this, but Joe Pesci to me was amazing. And he had one line that always cracks me up is when they're at the top of the attic and they're going to take the rope across to the treehouse. And Marv's like, he's going to call the police. And he's like, from a treehouse. That line kills me every time. Like he starts off by saying right. like, what are you talking? And then it occurs to him. And then it's great. It's a great line.
It is fun when logic peeks its head out in this movie.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Like Punxsutawney Phil.
That's right.
Bill Schultz quotes.
Well, the one that stands out for me is what's his name? Shockingly has a arc where he goes from everyone thinking he's a murderer to being the old man that saves the day at the end. No one saw that coming. I forget his name, but at some point when Macaulay Culkin meets him at church, he goes, "Well, now everyone's welcome in church." I was raised Catholic. I have found that is not the case.
Especially the gays back in the 90s, right?
Gay or, yeah, like not a lot of people are welcome in church, and to the point where the wet bandits wouldn't even go into church. And I respected them for that. But that one stuck out with me. How about you, Kev?
Those are the ones I fired out, those four when I came out of the gates with. So those are the ones that jumped out. All right, let's kick on over to five fun facts.
And we'll it's be opening. The judge of that.
Oh, they're fun. This first one is a doozy. And it's opening weekend, Home Alone topped the box office, making $17 million in 1,200 theaters.
Insane.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. This is what really made me get my panties all moist. The movie maintained its number one spot for a full 12 weeks and remained in the top 10 until June of the following year. That was the bygone era where films were in the theater for 3-4 months without fail. Now it's 4 weeks and, you know, you're on iTunes in 2 months after release date. So
what day did this release? Like, was it a Christmas release? Or
I think it was for some reason, I'll look it up, but I'm pretty sure it's Thanksgiving. I remember because I saw it in the theater.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It would make more sense to be a Thanksgiving release, but it stayed in theaters till June.
Yeah, wow. That is nuts. November 16th, 1990. Close.
Okay. All right.
That's amazing.
Until June. I mean, Batman was in the theaters from June to October, and that was the year before.
Ugh.
Number two.
How hard it is to find some family fare, guys.
Yeah. You know,
stuff that everyone can enjoy.
All right, fellas.
You can always make money on the family stuff.
Two guys turned down the role of Harry in this film. I'm going to give you one of them was 70s, 80s, 90s, I guess even 2000s. Fucking megastar. Absolute megastar. The second guy, more known in the 80s and 90s, a little 2000, but the first one, megastar. Couple guesses. Go ahead.
Jack Nicholson?
Nope. Not a bad guess.
Can I watch Brad embarrass himself before I answer correctly?
I was going to go with Pacino.
You're in the
Brad
same
is
vein.
Closer.
You're in the same vein.
De Niro.
Robert De Niro and John Lovitz. Man.
And John Lovitz. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci, this movie's like very different.
Yeah.
Do you think if De Niro was in it, Kevin McAllister would take his BB gun and shoot him in that giant mole of his on his face?
That's why he turned it down. He's like, I'm not letting that kid fuck with me. Like, I'm not going to let that be happen. No.
It's still like about 5 or 10 years before De Niro completely sold out. And then, if Home Alone came out in like 98, De Niro would be all about it. He would be in there just doing his De Niro cartoonish thing like Pacino. And he would have done it. Absolutely would have done it.
Do you think if John Lovitz was in this film and then went to the part where he got blowtorched in the head, he would have said, it stinks? Fun fact number three, Kevin places a tarantula on Marv's face and it was indeed a real spider. Daniel Stern agreed to let it happen, but for only one take. What wasn't real was the scream. He had to dub that in later to not frighten the spider.
Makes sense. Yeah.
At least you didn't see a glass piece like Dr. No with Sean Connery.
Wait, what was a glass piece?
He had glass covering him when the tarantula was going up in his bed in Dr.
Oh,
No.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We did that a few weeks ago on this.
An additional part of that is I actually just saw this. I think someone put us on TikTok. They wanted to do an animatronic tarantula the entire time, and they just couldn't get it to look good. So they didn't tell Daniel Stern until that day. Hey, by the way, we don't have the animatronic one, so it's got to be real. And he's like, "All right, one take, motherfucker. That is it."
That is.
By the way, you know what that tells me? They never had an animatronic tarantula.
Of course
that's
not.
That's what they fucking told them.
Well, that's like the infamous scene in Nakatomi when Hans Gruber drops. The guy tells Alan Rickman, "All right, it's gonna be 1, 2, 3, and then drop." But what he does is he drops him on 2, so it's a legit look of shock and fear in his face as he gets dropped. Number 4. I'm not gonna make you try and guess. Chris Farley auditioned for the role of Santa, but obviously did not make the cut. Kelsey Grammer was almost cut, but he turned it down for the role of Uncle Frank.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, but he didn't get Uncle Frank either. So, like, he turned – I don't get
it. He turned down the role. He turned it down.
Okay, got it. Got it.
Number
Uncle
5.
Frank, the casting of Uncle Frank was pretty fantastic. Those
yeah,
are all,
yeah, yeah, it really was.
That's a fun. I could have done with more Uncle Frank. You know.
Yeah, he's a watered down Peter Boyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The film that plays when Kevin is hiding from the pizza guy, Angels with Filthy Souls, was a mock short created specifically for the film. A similar fake sequel appears in Home Alone 2.
Angels with Filthier Souls.
Right. Yes.
Oh, okay. Come on. Yeah.
Bill,
I hate that I know this.
Devils with Clean Souls?
That's a reboot.
Bill did so much research for this. He was telling me I wanted to give him a chance to jump in with something for his own fun facts.
Thank you. Yeah.
But now, listen, let's let the audience begin their, you know, quench their journalism taste in our next segment, Ask a Gutter. Good old Brandon Oglesby, Newark Knight. He said, "Oh God, and the sequel are my favorite Christmas movies." Home Alone, we're talking about, obviously. Cool. Bill and Brad, how long was it before you realized the detective film that Kevin was watching wasn't real?
Yeah, too long.
Yeah,
yeah.
An hour and 45 minutes.
I mean, they did do it on black and white film, but
I thought it reeked of being fake pretty much right away.
Yeah.
Well,
and we're not that smart, but yeah.
Well, I was also probably 9 when I first saw this movie. So it's not like, you know, when you see something at 9 and you just accept it as reality, it kind of takes a little bit for you to go, God's not real. That's right.
I want to be able to say that you could point to, like, you know, one of those characters and go like, "Oh my God, it's the guy from the Wingstop ads," but it's not that.
Wingstop.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it almost feels like, oh, those are character actors and we should know them. I'm sure they went out of their way to cast people that are sort of, you know, unrecognizable for the most part. But right. Yeah, also just the way they wrote all that dialogue. It was so insanely suited and tailored for what was to come that it was like,
yeah.
Hey, yeah, that's the girl who dresses up in the old man suit in the Six Flags commercials. I recognize her anywhere.
Yeah, you know, with the lands that we live in now, with all these reboots and like nostalgia, someone should make an Angel with Filthy Souls movie.
Yeah,
like I'm sure.
Like Ryan Reynolds fucking... did that with Deadpool. We can wish that into existence, right?
Mm. Yeah, I'm going to disagree. I don't think anyone should actually make an Angels with Filthy Souls
that'd be
movie.
Great.
I don't think that's a good idea. No.
Because all you're waiting for is Keep the Change of Filthy Animal and the 1, 2, yeah, 10, and they shoot him. Nah.
That's how Joanne signed off on my Christmas card, actually. Keep the change, you filthy animal. Thank you. Yeah.
I'm more surprised that she got you a Christmas card. Next question.
Yeah, me too.
Same Brandon Oglesby again. And does John Candy's appearance in this film make it better, or is it a useless cameo?
What?
better.
Who is this person?
He's asking Glad,
I'll let you answer first, but I know your response. Go ahead.
I mean, I for me, it's like all you want is to just follow Candy and O'Hara and go someplace else with them. I mean, whoever said that is a tasteless hack. That's no good. And by the way, that is clearly improvised. That whole chunk where where she's talking about, you know, but have you ever left your son anywhere alone?
Funeral parlor.
And he goes over the whole run about the funeral parlor.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. And by the way,
yeah,
great.
You're never going to be able to sell me on, and I don't care what it is. And I know there are plenty of terrible movies that John Candy was affiliated with, but he's never the problem.
He was only available for like 24 hours, so they literally shot all of his scenes and he improvised most of it, and he got like paid like a day rate,
$415.
Yeah, and he was supposed to be $450
Candy got. Yeah, right. Fucking believable.
He was supposed to be in Home Alone 2, but now he was like, wait a second, I did the other one for $500. Can you throw me a bone? And they're like, sorry, John, we don't have that kind of money. So he didn't get it. So
another reason. Well, and Brad, I wrote it down because it resonated with me. You know, his polka band, shockingly, was concert based. Do you remember their name?
I'm not gonna watch that.
Oh.
Remind me.
The Kenosha Kickers.
Yeah.
Now, Kenosha is an across the border town from Illinois to Wisconsin, where Brad and I, with our shitty IDs, we're still able to get into bars.
That's right.
In Kenosha.
That's right.
They barely looked at them. And it resonated with me for that reason.
He had a few good, I'm sure he improvised the names of the different, singles that they had recorded that he was proud of and that had done well. But, you know, he dropped a Sheboygan reference in there. I mean, wind him up and let him go. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Watch this. Ready?
I think one of them was like, oh, you might remember us from our hit Polka, Polka, Polka.
Yeah.
That was it.
And then he starts singing, he goes, Polka, 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 Polka. And it's like, dude, it's so funny because like, why? Like, come on.
Anyone watching that is like, why am I watching this bratty blonde kid when I want to watch a whole movie about John Candy's?
Imagine the young man that Kevin is referencing here, who instead is watching this movie and going, you know, this movie is tighter than a drum plot wise. I love the character development and it is end to end funny and sweet. Why the fuck did they slow it down with John Candy?
Man.
And I'm like, what? What are you watching?
By the way, the real follow-up we were completely devoid of and we deserve really could be Planes, Trains, and Automobiles 2, Catherine O'Hara and John Candy's trek to go get him.
100%. Be amazing. Amazing.
Great. We're all aboard for that, right, fellas?
Okay. I looked up, I looked up because I was surprised in rewatching it. I was trying to figure it out without, like, I knew it was 1990. I don't know her age exactly. Catherine O'Hara, 36 years old. You could have told me she's 46.
Right.
She sort of is ageless in a lot of ways, but she's great. And she's beautiful in it, too. I was like, you could see where she could have had a different type of career and not one that I would have wanted her to have. But, you know, it's like.
Yeah. But also, it was so clear. And you know, I just rewatched it too. Like everything she's wearing, and like, but they were literally just button down blouses that she wore all the way up to the neck. Huge linebacker shoulder pads in her blazers. It was not a great time for female fashion. Everyone, you could have been a double D or a C cup. We wouldn't know. They all look like a lineman on the Bears. And like, I remember, and Brad, I'm sure you had it too. Like when you're a kid, you know, there's like hot moms, but you got so little about their hotness because they're all wearing shit like that. And I remember every once in a while, mom would wear this like sexless soccer mom thing that she was wearing in Home Alone. And they'd bend over a little bit and you'd see a hint of like a bra strap in between their many buttons. And that would be enough. You'd see a little bit of that, like, All right, I'll have to dine out on that a little bit. That's all you had.
Next one, we got at Rex Crumb. I hate Home Alone so much that if I had the time, I would send Bill Schultz a DVD so he could put a cigarette on it during tonight's recording.
Fine with that. Send me the cigarettes, too.
yeah, Anthony's not giving raises out for Christmas.
Yeah. What? Of course.
At Lord Snurts, one of the few Christmas films that I enjoy, but that's probably nostalgia. Here's my question. Kevin is an adult. What is his occupation?
Oh. And you chastised me because I answered on Twitter, so I'll let Brad go first.
I feel like I think he owns a mattress shop. I think he's a small business owner. He does it his own way. He makes his own ads. He loves mixing it up with people. One thing I don't want for Kevin is for him to go into be like a hedge fund bro. I don't want that for him. I'm sure that's one road he could have gone. But right. I like to think that he did learn something along the way, and he loves pulling people together. And mattresses are a great way to make people happy.
Brad, I respect that, and I want that for Kevin. But remember, he grew up in Winnetka, so he's going to be a hedge fund dude.
You're right about that. He went to New Trier. You're right.
Yeah.
You want to say like an Allstate, like a local branch owner of an Allstate insurance company. That or he pissed away all of his parents' money when they died in a plane crash, and then pow, here he is sucking dudes off at a bus station.
By the way, don't get me wrong.
That's very dark.
I think it's possible. I also don't. I mean, look, there's like a Jorn Vandersloot version of Kevin McAllister too. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
He goes to Aruba or Barbados, he murders someone, and then he just is like, I've got a bloodlust, and I'm going to keep this going until someone.
He's way too emotive with everything, screaming, what have you, to be that much of a sociopath. Come on. Yeah. He's murdering a girl in an island. Come on.
Right. True. Next question. Bill says, I bet Kevin went the way of Frank Abagnale in Catch Me If You Can. So,
yeah, I see him being like in jail for being a con man. Yeah.
at race to Canis. Oh, my God, this movie sucks. And I was about to suggest doing it on the show. LOL. Question: most annoying child actors of all time.
Great question.
I have two answers that are very firm, but I'll allow my guests and co-hosts to go before me.
I don't know. Yeah,
most annoying child actors.
I was not. I didn't love the character Urkel, and I didn't love Jaleel White as Urkel.
That works.
I would co-sign that. Yeah, I'd co-sign that too. Not a fan. I never liked Screech either, or Dustin Diamond.
Oh God, no.
Yeah. Which is, by the way, it's in the same right. Genre, which is just the over the top nerd or whatever that's supposed to be. But with the altered voice. Also, by the way, whoever the actress is, I don't know what happened to her. I'd be curious to know. But the girl who played the lead, the eponymous role in Small Wonder,
Vicky,
terrifying.
Dude, do you remember? I went to college with her at Emerson.
You did?
What?
Yes.
Did I meet her?
Did I tell you this? This is an amazing story. So the girl that played Vicky in Small Wonder went to Emerson.
Come on.
And I want to preface this by saying I did not do this. I was in the classroom with her when it happened. But of course, every dickhead at Emerson would go up to her. And I hate to say it, she didn't age. She you could tell she was Vicky, but pimples, maybe a little weight, all that stuff. But everyone would go up to her in class and be like, Vicky, did you do your homework? Are you late? And it was brutal. She ends up leaving freshman year from Emerson College and becomes like a Christian fundamentalist.
Oh, I was going to guess life coach.
Yeah. Well, same difference. But I was in classes with Vicky. Yes. Yeah. And I did not do the robot thing. Can't emphasize that enough.
I was going to also guess OnlyFans star that makes about $28 a month.
Well, all right. I haven't updated my Vicky knowledge. That could be a fact.
She might have poured rubber cement in a wrong orifice and is paying the price in her later years. You never know.
I still feel terrible about that. You know what? The problem is I didn't do the robot voice, but I didn't speak out for her. I didn't go up to the other episode.
What are you, her white knight?
You don't do that.
You know what you weren't? You were not an ally.
I was not an ally. I wasn't a rally. That's what they call robot allies. So, yeah.
That'd be great. You ask her to go out, like, would you like a blowjob in the back of your 1986 Toyota Camry?
Dude, I think people kind of did do that. it wasn't good. It wasn't good.
I have two. I'm going to say without fail, and I've never watched one episode. I just see this little twerp on commercials and clips from his show. And it's the kid who plays young Sheldon. He's on Jeopardy sometimes as a category. And his face and smugness annoy me because he thinks he's as smart as his character, but he's a dumb dildo who just read lines off cards. Like, he's not a fucking a brown undergrad. Let's cut the bullshit. The other one I just absolutely – I got Brad on that one. The other dildo I cannot stand.
I sort of appreciate also everyone goes to Harvard or Yale with the quick, Ivy League reference. I like that you went with Brown.
That's off the beaten path, man. See, that's why
I also just love calling a 9-year-old a dumb dildo, you know? It's wholesome.
All for it.
The other kid annoys me, and it angers me how he has a showbiz career. I don't even know his name. He's that kid. I don't watch the show either, but I see him in commercials yet again. He's that kid from Stranger Things who's missing fucking teeth and stinking lips.
He's great. He's great.
His teeth and a mouth just annoy me. I go, how is this kid having a role in Hollywood when he's got a meth mouth at the age of 12?
Meth mouth.
Yeah,
that was one of my favorite Cosby Kid characters.
Meth mouth. Dark side of the Cosby Kid show. Oh, Michael Cera can go fuck himself too. Let's add him in the mix.
No, he was an adult playing a kid though. You know.
I do feel a little bit like that. That was who does a good Michael Cera impression? I feel like that should be one that should have been
lesbians.
I thought that was the other way around.
All of them. Every single one.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, and all right. So basically, Drew Barrymore is almost exactly the same age as Brad and I are. I'm Brad's elder. I'm 2 days older.
Two days.
And he never treats me with the respect I deserve. But so I remember my mom telling me when she grew up with Leave It to Beaver, right? She was the same age as Beaver. And she hated how cutesy he was because she felt she was this same age and much more mature and world-weary than this punk that was playing Beaver. I remember thinking of that in E.T. because I would watch Drew Barrymore, who was my age, and she was acting like she was cuter and younger. And I'm like, we are far more world weary at this age. And we are kids of letters at this age. And I remember not liking Drew Barrymore because I'm like, we don't act like that. We are far more mature at this age. And
I think my mom
was the same with Beaver.
You should be a guest in her studio audience at our talk show and air your grievances while she's on air.
Would love it. And then would also like to date her because I could use some cash.
Just offer her some drugs. She'll fall right back into bad practices and you can land her.
It always amazes me. She never gave up drinking. All those drugs so early on, but she still drinks her.
Yeah.
Bourdain approach.
Yeah. Bill writes back to the child actor. He wrote, the kid who played in the remake of Miracle on 34th Street, I hated her with the fire of 1,000 Yule logs.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, she sucked. Yeah. Festive. Oh, she's trying to be so cute. And like a fake lisp. Oh, fuck her. I hated her.
Her haircut was annoying. All right. Because no one listens to the end of podcast, we're going to do our credits and our plugs now. Brad Morris, where can we find you?
Increasingly no place. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I shot some episodes of a show that'll come out, I don't know, maybe in the summertime, called Single Drunk Female.
Drew Barrymore story?
It's the Drew Barrymore story. Very nicely sewn in, Kevin.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's it's on Hulu, I think. I don't know. And then Brad Morris 773. Although I don't, are we allowed to stay on Twitter? What happens now?
Sure. I know. Yeah.
It feels a little bit like I'm staying at the party long after the lights were turned on, and it's kind of awkward. Yeah, I don't know. Instagram, and then, you know, just around. We usually, right now, for the next few days, at Italian beef stands and pizza places mostly. Yeah.
Bill Schultz, where can we find you besides Washington Square Park asking people to bum a cigarette?
It's different than bum. First of all, you don't even know the codes as far as who I solicit. It's kind of like that. We're still, Joanne and I are still Monday through Thursday at compoundmedia.com.
Yeah.
I forget what the subscription thing is. You can't afford not to subscribe to it. If you DM me, maybe I'll send you a free password. Put it that way. But yeah, and that's it. And I don't think I have anything in entrepreneur anytime soon. But the other thing I would also say is everyone needs an editor, which is what I do at Entrepreneur.
Nick Whitmer, what are you up to?
My first comedy special is out on a lovely streaming platform called Tubi. It's called Always Hungry. And I'm really proud of it. I think you should go watch it. Every time someone watches it, I get paid money. And Tubi's free, so there's no excuses.
Yeah. Put it on as a soundtrack of you have, as you have sex.
Exactly.
Don't forget to check out Fantasy Football Jibber Jabber in the Metaverse. Myself and Nick Whitmer co-host that baby, where we give out free money picks. We were on fire this last month, as well as fantasy football advice. Hey, by the way, take the Bears plus the 9. We did that already. You're welcome. And leave a 5-star rating, 2 or 3 sentence review for this very fine podcast. We appreciate that. And if you want to advertise with us, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com. Nick Whitmer, let's let this not-so-ambiguously gay duo do what they've come to do. Pausing for laughter. That hits. Thank you. Let's welcome them to Gut the Sacred Cow.
I can't believe we're already like an hour in.
And I know. Now we're we're just a bunch of gals around a sewing circle and just chewing the chalk.
It does feel like we did it already.
I honestly thought we were signing off.
The good news is I have no place to go, so I'm happy to stay. Yeah.
Me too.
Bill, I'll let you kick it off here.
So I go back and forth with Kevin about this a lot, is like, can it be a classic if it doesn't age well? Like, so A, B, or C, like anything from like Gone with the Wind to whatever. If it doesn't age well, is it still classic? I say no, it is not. Because like no comedy ages well, really none, which is why Caddyshack is such a revelation, because it's still hilarious. And no comedy that's even 20 years old is as
wrong, wrong, wrong. Naked Gun and Airplane are still flawless.
Okay, yeah, there's an exception to every rule, Dick.
I just gave you two.
But you're saying 20 years old, so in the 90s, like Ace Ventura and like all those
Dumb
movies,
and Dumber.
They're not as good as they used to be.
They're great. Oh, no, I disagree.
Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore.
These are very few. Billy Madison, watch it again. This one fails on every level of whatever it was and why it got the zeitgeist as it did in 1990. Because I'll go back to when I thought we were editing the show. Everyone needs an editor. What the hell are you doing with the extended cast? You already got a problem with the budget. They had extended from $10 million to $14 million. The annoying uncle, the other family. Now, it's Kevin, his stupid brother, his sister, too. As a viewer, you're trying to keep track of all these stupid people that mean nothing to the plot.
And this is a, I think there's a version where this is a classic bad studio note, because this is obviously a big studio movie, where they're like, in the first draft, you could see potentially that it's like, it's just the immediate family, and it's the same story. And they go, it's kind of hard to believe that we don't know where Kevin is if there's only 5 people.
Good point.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like you get in the car and one of your kids is missing.
Exactly.
You know, like, what?
You're trying to create
like
the cover with
a chaos.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's the reason I think it's there. But I'm with you. And also, I just go back to the John Candy thing. Like, you know, go ahead and give me 25 cousins most of whom we don't see more than, you know, for 3 seconds. But you can't pay a legend who, by the way, at that moment, he was already John Candy.
Huge.
Like,
oh, huge.
Yeah. Like he's doing a favor for Chris Columbus and John Hughes.
Yeah. Ridiculous. And so you're paying attention to all that crap. And this movie could have gone a lot of ways. And so going back to the way too much extended family, one of the original drafts, you know, the annoying uncle that's like a dick from beginning to end. The original draft was that he paid Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern to rob the place because he was jealous of Macaulay's super rich family's success. And then they all three divvy it up. I'm on board with that. That's actually not bad. Otherwise, fuck him. But that was the original plotline. And also, the movie's so stupid where they still make him such a jerk, but without any of the payoff. It's just like, no, he's a jerk. But at the end, it was supposed to be that he was a mastermind of all of them. And the other, like, the sheen that is John Hughes trying to present the suburbs as this idealized Norman Rockwell version of Americana, and even though he only wrote the script, constantly frustrates me, as it does trying to find any person of color in this movie. It is like everyone's got the perfect haircut, as he did when he remade Miracle on 34th Street. It's like it's modern time, but everyone's dressed like the 40s, perfect suits, beautiful lighting, no black people. But that always bothered me. But also, and this is very artist subjective, so is opinion. You're either a Three Stooges guy or you're not. And I never was. I hated the Three Stooges. I was always like, even though it was comedy and it was supposed to be cartoonish, anytime one of them would get hurt, I just had a visceral reaction with it. And I'll tell you what, from beginning to end with Home Alone, with their slapstick humor, the minute Daniel Stern's foot slowly goes on to that
nail.
And this is a kid that's had a lot of tetanus shots, I was out. I felt it. My foot felt it, and it wasn't funny to me. And it was cheap for those that thought it was funny. All that crap. I mean, Daily Beast interviewed a doctor to actual how much physical damage would have occurred to all
of them. I saw that too.
Yeah, it was great. But this movie did not know what it was from beginning. And also, like, a weird kind of, aside from the Peanuts Christmas special, this is like one of the few mainstream things that was had a lot of Christianity in it. From the church's scenes where the Wet Bandits refuse to go into the church. And, you know, as I said at the beginning, the old guy that shockingly isn't so bad after all at the end. He's like, everyone's welcome in church. This thing actually, and, you know, Macaulay Culkin hanging out in the manger scene, it's very pro-Christian in a world where Christmas movies don't have any Jesus in them whatsoever. And I like those movies. I found that, like, so many years later watching it, it was a lot. I mean, he even does the sign of the cross before he eats and all that crap, and it takes you out of it. All of that, not needed. And he's a McAllister, so he's a dirty Irish. I'm sure he is Catholic. But,
you don't even say dirty, just say Irish. We all know.
Yeah, just Irish. Just Irish. And,
kidding
and
all also, of our Irish, like, friends.
It takes place in the real world, and there's just so many things. And yeah, I know it's a comedy, and I know it slaps all that, but it takes place in the real world. And the fact that the old man just drops, after saving Macaulay's life, just drops him off at the home, still alone with the cops, is like, well, I guess that's it. Like, never even curious as to where the parents might be. And across the board throughout the entire film, the logistics of everyone that's aware. And I also go back to the stupid running gag of Macaulay queuing up angels with filthy whatever, stupid, and using the soundtrack of it to shoot people. Well, the pizza boy, once he starts getting hit by what sounds like an AK-47, I'd probably call the cops.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I would say if I'm not even getting a tip and someone, and then, they do it a lot. And the burglars also, how many lunches could you have? They rob the entire fucking neighborhood, but they're so obsessed with what they know is a kid that's still in this house, even if it's just a kid and the phones are off. Why? What are you doing? The vendetta aspect makes zero sense. And you're taking out every which way but loose by all of the holes in this stupid movie. And I got a million more, but I've talked too much. Brad, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I hope the outside noise.
You make a lot of great points. And you do. You make a lot of great points. And then I watch this movie again, and I just go, what else do you want from a holiday movie? Like, this is pretty much like, you know, first of all, as far as the not standing the test of time thing and the agelessness of it all or timelessness of it all. Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a lot, honestly, at this point where, you know, what was 1990, like, first of all, the logistics of just being home alone and not having contact with a kid, like, it doesn't exist anymore. Now you're able to, there's no, like, they literally go through a whole thing in this movie of like, oh, the phone lines are down. Like, they go to great lengths to make sure there's no way to actually connect with this kid. And the kid, like, never has any interest in actually going across the street, even to old man Marley, and going like, I was left here alone. He decides that this is a great opportunity for me to grow up over the next few days and learn a lot of lessons. So we're like kind of forgiving a lot of insane logic shit. So I just move all that to the side. And for me, you're getting, first of all, God damn, is John Hurt great in tiny little fucking moments in this movie. That guy is in the Hall of Fame of character actors for me, where you're like, You're made to be this guy that is not paying great attention, right? And this suburban dad. And by the way, back to the John Hughes of it all, like, yeah, like, this is part of the canon of John Hughes, and it is sort of Jesus-y in a way. It's like John Hughes with complicated young white guys that have it all, who are kids or teenagers that are wreaking havoc on the world, who then finally kind of learn something. So Ferris Bueller, did he learn anything? I'm not actually sure.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
Devin McAllister, at least in this movie, and maybe it's because 20th was like, the kid's got to fucking learn something, John. By the end of the movie, he does go to church. He does have that he helps that guy out. He's giving. And he's, by the way, let's not forget, he bought milk. He bought eggs,
fabric softener.
And my favorite, maybe one of my favorite lines, and it's completely out of context, means nothing, is John Hurd's response to that is, you're a funny guy.
Yeah, that was a good line.
What does that mean?
Like, funny how? How do I find you funny? Funny amusing?
That's his version of
So I gotta say, like, now, like, as the dad of 9-year-old kids, like, they'll watch this movie with me. Like, Elf is their holiday. Elf goes, it doesn't matter if it's December, November, or August. Elf comes on, and they're stopping everything and they're watching Elf. And I put Elf in a different category than I put this movie, as for even in the holiday genre. But I gotta say, like, Culkin was, he was good in this movie as this kid. He was really good. Like, I thought
he
was.
I disagree. I don't think that ages well. Like, I thought he was one of the few times that a kid was endearing rather than annoying in a movie. But now that I watch it as old as I am.
He's annoying?
I think he's annoying, yeah.
But that's his arc. He's supposed to be annoying.
No, I mean, just like his choices. When he explores the space as an actor. I think that it is very difficult. I mean, you know, that famous Robert Altman quote where they asked him, like, how do you make a great movie?
How dare you? Casting. How dare you bring Altman into this conversation?
Totally doing it. Casting, casting, casting. And everyone always casts annoying child actors that are annoying because they're child actors. And Macaulay Culkin was a great casting move because he really wasn't that. And he was actually kind of cute. But I don't think his performance ages well. But if you're going to, and you're going to hate this, Kev, if you're going to look at a wonderfully casted kid that comes off as legit and not trying to be cute.
Ah, here goes Christmas Story.
Look no further than A Christmas Story.
Fuck that movie.
Ralphie beats Macaulay Culkin all the hell.
Disagree.
And I know that I'm supposed to be like matching those guys up like they're Tyson and Ali, but like, I don't even like those two movies have, to me, the only thing they have to do with each other is literally that the backdrop is Christmas time. That's it. Like, they're just not, they're not even the same.
And also one's good and the other isn't.
Well, I might be right. Yeah, I don't know. By the way,
Home Alone's fine, but to Brad's point, like, it is, you know what it is? It's window dressing. You have it on with mute if you're having a Christmas party or if you're trying to get work done. But it, to say it's a classic,
I will say
you got to sit there and be like, oh yeah.
I will say this. Like your thing about the Three Stooges, I think there's a lot of that. There's a lot of validity to that. Like, I think if you don't like bad guys or idiots getting, you know, beaten up for a long time, you're gonna hate the second half of this movie. I mean, that's mostly what it is.
Then you also hate Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote, which makes you a goddamn communist in my book.
I'm a commie.
It's like, aren't the bad guys supposed to get beat up? Like, what are we doing with this sympathy? Stepping on a nail? Like,
it was weird torture porn. And it was really, and Joe Pesci. By the way, this shows you how long ago it was. God help me, I don't know how they did this, but like Joe Pesci said recently that he actually got horrific burns with the famous when he comes in.
And oh, did he?
Like, how was that real fire for an A-list star?
The pyrotechnic guy came in and he goes, well, we tried it every which way, but the only way to really do this is to do it. You know?
they conned him with the tarantula.
That's it. By the way, on the tarantula, the reason I know the tarantula was real, other than just having a great set of eyes and being able to really detect these things, is that there's a shot where the tarantula gets tossed at some point and it falls like
on its back and it flips over. Yeah.
And I was like, that's genius that they use that, and maybe that was the only one they could get because there was like someone from ASPCA that was there going like, you get one shot. And and they fucking drop this thing on its back. But it's like in that moment, you're like, it makes a weird little movement that only a real animal could make.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Ironically, the same guy who worked as the pyrotechnic guy in Home Alone also worked as the weapons person on the film Rust with Alec Baldwin.
not too soon, by the way. It's allowed.
Enough time has elapsed. What other points you fellas have here?
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I thought great casting on the grown-ups. I mean, I maintain that. Like, you know, even Daniel Stern, which, you know, it's like, it's also like it's a tricky time to be looking backward and be like, oh, you got a Jewish robber during Christmas time. It's a tough time for that. But I like their relationship. It's a classic, like, alpha, beta, bad guy, you know, little guy, boss, big guy, moron kind of thing happening. And I enjoyed all that. But again, you put Catherine O'Hara and John Hurt. I'd watch Catherine O'Hara and John Hurt. I know he's dead now, but I'd watch those two as a couple all day long. What else did I like? I don't know. By the way, I never pay attention to this stuff, but because you guys asked us to do some thinking on it, there's a really good score to this movie. Like, it's
I was gonna say that.
I'm Dan, you to my first fucking point.
The score is, I have that in my notes too. The score is outstanding.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
Although, is it? Now, famously, they sent a print to John Williams, who was way ahead of their pay gauge, and he liked the initial print so much that he agreed to do the soundtrack. Yep. And it's great. It's but, like, here's the thing. For people that are listening that are young, kill yourself, because it gets worse. And when you get to my age, earworms
kill yourself.
Are horrific. Kill yourself, because earworms are horrific. Now, if I get a John Williams song that's an earworm and it's like a Raiders score or a Star Wars score, okay, fine, fair enough, because earworms last forever when you're my age. You get the Home Alone soundtrack in your head, you are putting a fucking 12 gauge in said head.
Me.
You're welcome. Anyone my age has now got it for a week. Dude, and it goes on and on, and it ain't good.
The best version of White Christmas, by the way. The boo-doo boo-doo ba-ba. It's perfect, dude. It's
so good.
Is that Bing Crosby?
No, Bing Crosby is the original, but this is like another one. This is like I actually listened to it earlier just to make sure I wasn't high. I was like, this is really good. It's an excellent version.
Okay. Any other notes, fellas, here, or that's all?
I can... Yeah.
I mean, no,
I know. I'm ready to
What
go.
About you two guys? Are we done? We got more?
I think that's it.
Okay.
You know,
good. Give me both of you, give me a score, 1 to 10 on the old scale.
Do I get to use tenths? Did I already ask that?
If you,
I give it like a solid 8 out of 10. I really do.
You know, you were supposed to trash this.
Yeah, that's the whole idea of the podcast.
You never told me. We didn't talk about this.
I was wondering. I was like, the more he talks, I think he liked it.
Is this now called filleting the sacred cow?
Maybe I'm in a vulnerable moment and feeling nostalgic. It is to watch this movie.
Yeah, like, you're home for Christmas
time of year, and the snow starts to fall, and you're in fucking Chicago. Give me a break, Bill. You're wearing a Bulls sweater. You know.
Yeah, but like, you know, you're asked to sympathize with a multi-millionaire kid. He's not even upper middle class. The Kevin McAllister is loaded. It's like the same John Hughes thing as Christmas Vacation, where you're meant to sympathize with Clark, because is he going to get the pool for his family? It's amazing.
You're trying to tell me what? Okay, so Christmas Story, you like so much more in large part because they're struggling financially?
Not necessarily struggling financially, but they're more relatable to average Americans. I mean, we've all had issues with that creepy heater. Was it heaters? Like, yeah. I think so. Accesses of the Chicago suburbs, but most Americans would.
How hard to sympathize. How much more money do you think the McAllisters have than Cameron or Ferris?
Probably. Yeah. Probably. Oh, yeah. No. Believe me. Look, yeah. I'm never going to destroy Ferris Bueller, but you're not wrong. I mean, it's hard to sympathize, but
Bill, give me a number for the love of Christ.
Even out Brad's, even out Brad's traitor that he is, I'll say 4.
We never said that this is what we were doing.
Yeah, you're supposed to trash the movie.
All right. I did that with Hateful Eight, and this one grabbed me in my soft spots.
That's because you're a Nazi sympathizing pedophile.
Oh, right. That is the best grinder name I've ever heard.
That was the target market for this movie. So.
I took the vowels out, so it's actually phonetically.
I can't wait to see that. I can't wait to see that band at Lilith Fair next summer.
Fantastic! It's a double bill with who's the one? Sarah McLachlan.
Gino Visconti's favorite.
Hey,
not even kidding.
Loves Sam All right. Nick Whitmer, look, you got your work cut out for you. You got one guy who's on your side, maybe one guy is on your side, maybe. I'm trying to keep an air of mystery here, but I don't know how that's going to come out. Go ahead, Nick. What do you have?
As a score?
No. I'm going to hear your notes first and then your score.
Oh,
Jesus Christ. Yeah, so you've done this three or four times already.
No, but that you asked them their score and then they said, what do you got? So I was a little, that's why I was confused. Oh. This movie, it's like, it's just a warm sweater. It's great. It's such a great, it's Christmas. It's like, do you hate joy? Do you hate 70 degree days? Do you hate blowjobs? Like, this is just perfect. It's like, there's not like all of the things that are far-fetched about this movie. And I agree. There are some weird logic, but they at least make an attempt to explain everything. Like, they're in Paris. Why do they go to Paris? Well, it's only like on one line of dialogue, and it sucks when exposition is what's, you know, giving you the details of the story. But John Hurt's brother lives in Paris. They're actually staying at his apartment. Now, they don't show him in the movie. Again, maybe that's not a great thing, but that's the reason they're going to visit family in Paris to spend Christmas in Paris.
By the way, but is this the same brother who has that fucking condo in town in New York?
I was going to say, I think it's the same brother whose house he booby
trapped. Oh, they're hurting for money. Yeah. Right?
But the phone's not working. They even show the tarantula a few times in the background. It's just like, it's like, to me, this movie, it's like, I know it's formulaic, but it's not Citizen Kane. Like, it's a holiday family movie. It's supposed to appeal to 6-year-olds and 46-year-olds, you know, like, that's what the purpose of the movie is. So of course you can pick apart logic here and there, but it was great. I thought the arc of Kevin, he was a brat in the beginning. He stays home. He kind of realizes that without his family, he's miserable. He goes to church and he confesses to the old man. He's like, I was terrible. I was bad. And that's why my family's away. And then he gets his family back after defending his house. So there's like an arc there. There's an arc to the old man. He fucking meets he ends up talking to his kid. He's scary. And then he's nice. And you know what I mean? Like, to me, like, this movie is just great. And the physical comedy, like, physical comedy sucks now.
What it's a
like,
Greek hero's journey.
But that's what it's supposed to be. You can't shit on, a fucking tiger for being a tiger. Like, it's supposed to be that. That's what it's supposed to be. It's a Christmas
movie.
This
movie is a warm sweater. I say just go buy a warm sweater. It will do you better.
I will buy a warm sweater, drink hot cocoa, and watch this movie.
He didn't only say it was a warm sweater. He said it was a warm sweater or a 70-degree day with a blowjob.
Yeah.
All right. I can't argue with that. Although sometimes it gets too hot for a blowjob.
No such thing.
But it like, the physical comedy to me, like, Daniel Stern is unbelievable. Joe Pett, like, physical comedy today is so contrived and shitty. Like, the fact that he was stepping on those ornaments and they were made out of sugar, but he still said it hurt. The falling, the paint cans, like, yeah, all this shit, like, still to this day makes me laugh. Like, you know, it just does. And I don't know, to me, it's just a perfect Christmas movie for me. I would give it like an 8.5, honestly. Yeah. Like, it's one of those movies you watch it, like, maybe not every year. Maybe I skip and rotate, like, next. Like, I watched it this year. Next year, I watch Home Alone 2. Then the year after, I watch Home Alone 1. But
what about Home Alone 3? Where does that fit in the rotation?
Nowhere, sir. yeah, I just, you know, it's like, I get, like, you can pick apart the movie. There's logical flaws here and there. But again, it's not, they're not trying to make some high art, farty, you know, movie here. It's a family movie, and it's excellent at what it's trying to do, and it's good enough at all the other things to where it's just an overall good, solid movie.
It's a torture porn family movie.
Yeah, maybe Kevin McAllister grew up to be Jigsaw in the Saw films. We don't know that.
That I buy. That is actually his trajectory right there.
So Nick gives it an 8.5. Brad 8. Schultz 4. Good God. Look at that. These notes brought to you by guttingthesacredcow.com, where you can drop a note and say hello, or to do a sponsorship with us. That's where you get a hold of us. And thank you again for those 5-star ratings, 2 or 3 sentence reviews. Notes. I forgot John Williams did the score for this until I saw the credits. That being said, this is the worst John Williams score ever. It's not even close. Schultz, you said it best. The whole nee, nee, nee. Holy shit. The one I do like, the frenetic when they're getting run, they realize they all overslept, the fast pace, that I'm fine with that. Everything else is just blah. John Williams, though, national treasure. Hell, I'm an atheist, but he needs to be canonized whenever that man decides to pass. Yep. Make him a saint, and I'll go visit him in Vatican City. Movie. Catherine O'Hara has not aged well. John Hurt has not aged because he's dead.
Yeah.
If Joe Pesci had a swear jar on set, he must have owed his salary that he made from Goodfellas. I would have loved to see him try and stifle all the curse words around all those kids. That would be a joy to see that in action.
I hated that too. The Michel Fluckle, Schmeichel Fluckle took me out of it when he's doing everything but swearing.
Yeah.
Whereas his Christmas loved, Story's old man did.
I love that. That was great.
What's the worst thing that he says? He lets one thing go and it's something like, I'm going to drop you in a thing of motor
bite
oil.
Bite you and yeah. bite you. And then he actually bit Macaulay Culkin. He still has a scar from that, he said.
Yeah.
Daniel Stern let a shit out, he said. Daniel Stern, there's a shit out there.
One of the funnier ones is you could tell he was searching for the word, maybe. I don't know if it was written, but he goes, I'm going to get you, you little creep. And it's is like a word that aged in a way that like it only means one thing now. Yeah. So when it's like, you're like, what, he's a child molester? What are you talking about?
Or he's a teacher at UCB.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next note, too many goddamn gingers in this film for my liking. I am all for genetic engineering in this case. Redhead dudes, you better go underground like the Resistance did in the Terminator films. Run and hide. Is that Miles Teller hanging out with Buzz in that one scene? That sure as shit looked like him to me.
The curly haired kid?
Kinda. It was a quick flash. Yeah, it looked like him. Speaking of Buzz, he is easily one of the ugliest kid actors I have ever seen. Also in that Ring of Honor, the bully from Christmas Story and the Shermanator from American Pie. Aha! All redheads follows right down my theory. But again, seriously, Buzz looks like that kid who went to school who smelled like sour milk and broken dreams.
who
is buying the old man salt that Bud says turns bodies into mummies? Is that like the black the 4chan black market Home Depot?
It's what are they called? Urban legends of a neighborhood. It's not supposed to make sense. The fact that he murdered his family and got away with it,
just to turn the zombies
around doesn't make sense.
10-year-old kid would go, I don't think so. Or is this just a metaphor?
When I was a kid, go ahead.
I was going to say, or is that whole zombie salt thing, or is that just a metaphor for bath salts?
Maybe that's it.
I don't know.
And also, like, even before triggers was a word back then, it does trigger anyone from Chicago with regards to just John Wayne Gacy. When they start talking about that scene, like, you figure John Wayne Gacy probably used something like that on one of his many boy victims. And it was too much. Frankly, it was a fuck you to everyone from Chicago.
Fuller drinking Pepsi while giving the Belushi eyebrow raise from Animal House was a cute nod, I thought.
Hmm.
No one caught that?
Yeah. All right.
Oh, okay.
I'll give it to you.
Uncle Frank is a cheap asshole, and I hope he gets finger popped by a drunken Santa Claus.
Wow.
He really was... They decided to really lean in on that. It was sort of like, this feels pretty straightforward, but we can milk this all throughout this movie. Yeah.
I disagree with you, Brad. I don't think Kevin McAllister is that much of a brat. Every adult in this movie.
No, I think he's talking about the uncle.
No, Kevin McAllister was bratty in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Every adult in this film is an asshole except for John Candy. Every single one. Kevin's mom pretty much tells him he's an asshole and wants to wish him away. Then again, I bet Macaulay Culkin wished his actual parents were, his money-siphoning parents, excuse me, were wished away to debtor's jail or a holding cell in any Russian gulag because they bled that poor kid dry of all of his riches.
Ugh. Yeah, that was one of the things that I picked up this time, was just how mean everybody was to him and how unnecessary. It's like, I know he was a dick too, but like, it's like when Buzz fucked him about the pizza.
Well, by the way,
it's like when I was a kid, so we grew up with I have four siblings, there's five of us. If I got in a fight with my older brother, my mom would yell at my older brother because he knew better. But Buzz and Kevin get into it with the pizza thing and they spill the Coke on his ticket and they throw it in the garbage and all these other things, they get mad at him. And I'm like, you're not mad at the 15-year-old kid who's bullying an 8-year-old? That guy's a fucking monster.
I agree. The parenting isn't great long before they leave him there. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, terrible. But you know what? Kids got to learn. Life ain't fair. You know,
it's not sometimes, fair, but they had a stacked deck against the kid. The kid wasn't all, listen, he did. Wasn't perfect, but no, they were all jerk offs. Listen, and I'm going to get in a hot second. That statue that keeps getting knocked over by their front door is a typical reoccurring psych gag from every 80s and 90s film or sitcom. They rang that door.
That one is, to me, the one that you talk about editing, lose that every time. Why? Yeah, right. Why did that stay in?
Yeah.
It doesn't add anything to do a callback like three times on a joke that really isn't that great to begin with.
No.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Now, let's get ready for one of my favorite topics on this. They leave for the airport. And as you Chicago natives have said, you know the area well, so you can attest to this. They leave for the airport late, 45 minutes before the flight. Now, I live 20 to 25 minutes from Newark goddamn airport, and I could not get on a plane that fast. I know this is pre-9/11, but I don't know how far that suburb is from O'Hare, but there's no goddamn way that they got on that bus, beat the rush hour traffic in the morning, got their luggage checked, ran through the lazy-ass metal detectors, and made it on that plane in 45 minutes.
But it's
that
drama. It's happen. Drama. It's drama. It's like, you know, it's like it's the rule of screenwriting is if you're going to tie a lady to the tracks, make her pregnant.
Right.
Like you got to make it raise the stakes. 45 minutes. What? That's the whole
Nick,
point of it.
You are a shitty logistics apologist. That's what you are.
Listen, if I was watching a movie that was supposed to have amazing logistics, I would shit on it. But this, you have to acknowledge for what it is.
But to Kev's point, it is still a comedy that is very much based in the real world. And when you see that kind and actually that one didn't really take me out of it as much as, you know, a lot of the stuff I already said, but like they really are lazy about a lot of that stuff. And it does
going to get into more of it in a minute.
I know it's a dumb comedy, of course, but
And one of the reasons I hate Home Alone 2 as much, they do the same shit, all the same shitty gags. Yeah. Like, oh, we're going to be late again. We forget them again. And then the whole ending where they find the fucking I can buy in this one, the homeless guy, the neighbor saving him. I buy that. I'm on board. I don't buy in the second one. The homeless woman somehow sees a bat signal from all of her pigeons while she's in Central Goddamn Park and he's over on 86 and whatever. You can't hear a ruckus like you can if you're next door. I hate part two for many reasons and that one really kills me. Next point. How is the furnace in the basement opening and closing as well as spontaneously igniting? Is this a Freddy Krueger wet dream? Again, let's have a little fun, but all right. I'm just not nitpicking that. I'm going to get to the better shit later, but that's annoying. This annoyed the piss out of me. The next morning when they wake up late, the goddamn house is completely clean after being in complete disarray the night before. What psychopath besides my mother would clean the house where it is real estate open house clean the night before you leave on vacation? That was batshit.
And the telegraphing crap. The telegraphing. You knew the gold tooth with Joe Pesci when he first notices it, and then he sees him again when he's a robber, and then Joe Pesci loses the tooth. What do you know? Even in 1990, what do you know? Well, everything'll be perfect, but they'll find the fucking tooth.
Yeah,
which is like, he cleaned up the house perfectly, but there's Joe Pesci's gold tooth, which I
X marks the spot. Dummies, pay attention.
Yeah.
Next one. What are some of the things you did when your parents were gone for an extended period of time? I can tell you one thing I did, and that is beat off with all the doors unlocked.
Brad got my 8-year-old brother drunk. I remember that when my parents were gone at one certain party. Well, no. I mean, I was not guilty, but like,
how old were you guys?
And I don't know. It was like
36.
That's what they say.
This was last week.
That's the thing when you get an 8-year-old drunk. It's like, I hope you're 10. If you're like,
I mean, he was 10. Can't emphasize that enough.
Funny. Nice to see Kevin channeling Kevin's mom channeling Obi-Wan Kenobi, like when he learned that Alderaan blew up as when Kevin McAllister's mom is on the plane going, Kevin! Now, how in the double-ended dildo hell did she realize she forgot him? They did a head count in the van. They didn't do a physical verification. It was a sister who did that anyway. It's not like she went back to coach like a good mother would do and buckle all of her kids in, make sure they were comfortable. No, Mommy Dearest had to head right to first class beeline and get her champagne on and ignore her hatchlings. So how the hell did she know that Kevin was the one that was missing and that she forgot?
Because if you have that feeling like you left something behind, it's going to occur to you, oh shit, I didn't see Kevin in the airport at all. Like eventually you're going to get there. I totally buy that. Especially as a mom, you're going to go, oh fuck.
They do explain it. And you got it and you didn't even realize you got it. It was a little Obi-Wan. Kevin gets scared about something and he says, Mom, and she wakes up from a nap, and it is like
telepathic
between the mom and the kid. And she's like, Kevin! Like she gets it because she's so entwined with her kids, man. And
This is tying in my next point. Now, this podcast has done a lot of good and a lot of bad, and it's gotten my jeweler's loop. So it is now at a 2010 level of site excellence. And by doing that in this podcast, we have seen 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is the eighth John Hughes film, two of the vacation films we've done. So I guess we'll call it eight. John Hughes loves psychopathic main characters. Ferris Bueller is a psychopath. Ducky is a psychopath. Clark Griswold is a psychopath. Now let me introduce Kevin's mom again. She gets out of the airport, pushes the French lady off the phone. Listen, bitch, just because Dyfus is going to get to your kid faster than you can to your kid doesn't give you a right to be that annoying asshole. And just run to an airline counter and ask to use the phone there, all right? I don't think she has two French toonies and loonies. I don't know what you call francs back in the day, the coins, whatever we're going to call it. I don't care. I'm not going to Google. I'm sure Schultz did. What a psychopath. More on that in a minute. The sergeant taking the call to the police station, someone mentioned this movie before, is Billy Madison's lawyer friend. Did you catch that?
Mm-hmm. I did.
For John Hurd, we all know he's an ultra-rich guy, right? Why does he have brute cologne? That's reserved for people who camp out overnight in front of a Best Buy on Thanksgiving Eve.
Because they put like 40 grand in the budget.
Wait, yeah. I thought that was really fancy stuff.
Yeah.
No more.
But regarding the phone, real quick, to stop to halt you. But like, if you're just thinking from a filmmaker's perspective, is like the shot is the woman has to go get on a payphone. How do you make that more interesting? Is like you push a French lady out of the way. It's just like it's just movies, you know. Like you can't just have her walk up to an empty phone or have her wait patiently. Yeah, wait 40 seconds patiently with a you finish. It's fine. I'm not in the mood. Like you know what I mean? It's
how much has the invention of the cell phone destroyed any and all?
I know.
Episode. Commando. Yeah. Commando, she would have been dead in the first 10 minutes of the film.
Every episode of Seinfeld doesn't work because of cell phones.
Yeah.
Next one. There are more black people at a march on Charlottesville than in a John Hughes movie. You can cash in the under black people or any people really under 2.5 and lay 15,000 and you can cash that bet every single time.
Even the lady who worked at the bodega, whatever they want to call it, was just a white lady.
It's like maybe the pizza boy was closetly gay, but that's as much.
All you're going to get.
To play devil's advocate, and I don't want to throw Bill under the bus in terms of what his upbringing was. But
And he used to actually quite literally throw me under buses.
like Norberg and Naked Gun 2.5?
John Hughes isn't dreaming up a parallel universe where there are people other than wealthy white people. It's literally where he's from. There are nothing but well-off people, like period, unless you go to Highwood.
That doesn't count. Highwood. I thought you said Highland Park.
No, Highwood.
Highwood. Yeah.
I'm counting well-off Jews.
Bradley.
But by the way, try and find me a well-off Jew in a John Hughes movie. You're not going to find one either.
Good point. Yeah. Nope. That's a great point. Yeah.
Kevin McAllister doing his best Fred Norris impression with the sound effects when the pizza guy came a call, and I appreciated that. He's also pushing a grocery cart full of items, but he walks out with two measly bags worth of stuff. That's it. And then the bags break. Hey, should have asked for paper and plastic. Again, he's only 8. I get it. But he has a lifetime ahead of him before he takes a job at a supermarket, bagging groceries and pushing carts and dealing with a store manager who was an ex-Marine and made employees sweep and mop the back room and licked his finger and said it's not clean enough. Oh, wait, that was autobiographical. Sorry about that. Thankfully, the entire block is on vacation because Bill said it before, when you blast gunshot sound effects that sound like the South Bronx, people get on the phone real goddamn fast.
You think?
Yeah.
You think?
And it's also like, why are we shitting on the pizza guy? We're not tipping him. We're thinking he's going to get killed. He's just the pizza guy. Like, yeah. God. Like, reserve that for the bad guys, you know?
Who has a better laugh than John Candy? Trick question. Yeah. No one has a better laugh than John Candy. That man is the most infectious laugh in the world, and it's been a sad place for the last 30 plus years that he's been dead.
Yeah. No kidding.
Kindergarten is how uneducated people pronounce that word that also fly Spirit Airlines and take a carnival cruise. That's who says the word kindergarten in such a
way. I fly Spirit. Come on.
Is there a mall Santa out there who doesn't have a dog track VIP punch card and also doesn't drive a Chevelle?
See, what? By the way, wouldn't have that been that Chris was a Farley's Honda. First movie? I think that would have been Chris Farley's first role, right? In a movie. What?
Farley?
If Chris Farley got that role as a Santa. That would have been his first movie.
Tommy Boy
role,
was until,
yeah,
Tommy Boy was until 95.
Yeah.
Unless he did some other piece before that, which like a quick day piece. The old guy is asking Kevin McAllister a lot of questions, except for the obvious one. Why the fuck are you here without your parents? What kid really, what kind of skullduggery are you trying to set on me, John Hughes, where a kid just goes to church not being forced to do so? Friends, does not happen.
That's the second time the old man saw him alone, too, at the store and then at the church, and it never occurred to him to be
then,
like...
Wait, when he saves his life and then just goes to the cops, here you go! Yeah. I'm assuming there's some parents in there.
Yeah. Funny, guys, if I was home alone, the last place I would visit is a church. Now, Kevin McAllister is giving lessons to that old guy. I'd rather listen to young Sheldon give me lessons on how to be an alpha male. Now the question I need to ask you guys, I'm floored that none of you asked, where did he learn to come up all these Tiger Pit-esque traps? Did he sit outside his dad's bedroom door while he slept and listen to his dad have Vietnam flashbacks? No. Are you kidding me? The kids show no proclivity of anything like that. If he was in the Boy Scouts, I'm all in. I buy it.
Right.
He's just a regular kid doing regular shit. Now he's rigging up acetylene torches and shit. Now he's got, you know, he also hung a rope from the roof to a goddamn treehouse. I don't know how to do that. I'm 46 years old.
He tied the perfect knot for it. And the other thing, too, is like he was rushed. Like he was at the church and the bell rang. He goes, oh, fuck, I got to be home. Right. He rushes home. And then he gets there like a quarter after seven, maybe. So he has like an hour and 30 minutes to do all. And so then he heats up the microwave. Like that's where you go. All right. I thought of that too. I was watching it. I was like,
Joanne Nosachinsky brought that up. Like, okay, you got a lot of prep work to do, kid, but you're just getting the napkin out and you're making your perfect little meal.
the meal was after he set up. But the problem was he did all the setup between like 7:15 and 8:45. Yeah. Like,
if this movie was made now, it would be called The Young Elon Musk Story. Because he's like Kevin McAllister is Elon now, I think.
He even lit a candle to eat Chef Boyardee. What the hell is going on here?
I got to protect my house.
Yeah.
And now we see that in a Liam Neeson film. But at the time, it was a throwaway line for a kid.
Yeah. If this script was circulating Hollywood today, they wouldn't make it in Liam Neeson movie.
I would watch the fuck out of, by the way.
Who wouldn't? This film would have been better if Joe Pesci dressed not as a cop, but dressed as David Ferry, the character he played in JFK. Nothing like a defrocked priest who is a gay crossdresser that breaks into upper middle class houses. I'd be all in for that one.
It's a riddle wrapped in an enigma. Macaulay.
I love that film. All right, let's call out the obvious. This kid gets all these traps ready like he's trying to trap Freddy Krueger in the real world. But you know what he didn't do? He didn't call the cops to say, I know what time these people are going to try and break at my house and kill me. Why did you do that? And Oh, hell, yeah. Why not just call 911 when you hear fumbling at the back door? Come on. Again, I'm all about the escapism. I'm all about the suspending the disbelief. I can, the Matrix, you set the confines of the world you want to do, fine. But when there are so many moments, like I just showed you, I'm so taken out of it. Now,
I will say though, part calling 911 was part of his plan, but he just wanted to fuck him up a little bit beforehand. Like,
yeah,
he
I don't take that chance.
Weirdly enough, I didn't. Did you guys pick up why he called 911 and said the other house across the street because he was going to end up there? Like, I don't
know. I don't think he wanted the cops to know that he was home alone.
Yeah, because that's like, what I was
because
thinking.
Because he
too.
Felt like he wished away his parents, and so that's a whole other can of
worms. You're going way too meta on that. I don't buy that for a goddamn second. I just think it was sloppy framing.
The whole movie. Yes.
Yeah. An 8-year-old. I said this before, but he attaches a rope from the roof to the treehouse. Is he the adopted son of a gay marriage between Tim Allen and Bob Vila? Did I miss something? No. Okay, Exhibit X to this court of shenanigans. Joe Pesci walks into the house, gets his head torched, and stands perfectly still for a good 4 Mississippi. What person who has no nerve endings left in their head just stands there while their head's getting flambéed?
I will see you that and raise you this. If you watch a scene, he blinks. He blinks a couple times while he's screaming. Yeah. Like,
it's funnier. It's a comedy. If he walked in the door and a fire came down and he ducked and left, it's not as funny as him standing there getting burnt. It's a comedy.
I have a recommendation for all of you. You know how like you've got the Darth Vader, being burned, and that's a Yule log on YouTube. There's a new Yule log where it's just Joe Pesci with the fire on his head.
Oh, that's funny.
Like 4 hours, and that's, you can put it on your screen and just let it keep going. Yeah.
But listen, I understand the comedy part. Have his jacket catch fire. Have them try and put each other out while the one of them's on fire. The other one catches fire. There are a million other ways to do it. That's better than just 1, 2, 3, 4 as he's getting cooked. Why did he call 911 and change his voice? And then give his neighbor's address. You're 10 seconds away from dying, and then you send the cops next door?
Yeah, the Daniel's cops are going to come faster if you're a little kid calling.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why to put on a, hello, this is me. I'm Liam Neeson now. I know I did Liam Neeson.
Maybe he thought that they would think it was a joke.
Yeah. Do you think, generally speaking, if you can figure out how to create all those feats of engineering, you probably have the wherewithal to go, I got to go to the cops and just tell them people are trying to kill me.
Right.
Yeah. And my parents are gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
My parents paying $35,000 a year in property taxes. Let's put the local police force to work.
That's right.
Next one. Daniel Stern steals the show without question. I love him. And Joe Pesci muttering curses under his breath like Yosemite Sam did in Looney Tunes. That took me back.
I love it.
I hated that. I hated it.
Now, the mother arrives, and the place is as spotless as they left it. They just had the Crimean War happen in there, and there's not a speck of dirt anywhere. Of course, Joe Pesci's tooth. To which the clueless dad...
There should be DNA of Daniel Stern and Joe Pesci all over the fucking carpet.
And then the dad finds a tooth and goes, huh, well, look at this. I'll be damned. No idea what this is from.
Like, how did he clean the tar off the steps?
Right. Yeah. And like, it's like a false tooth is something you track in like muddy footprints. Right, guys? Listen, have you seen how old is he now in this film? 8 years old?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you seen an 8-year-old clean anything where it's not as bad or worse than what it was when you first started?
Yeah.
No. I have a 7-year-old. She's just as bad. Did they have the cleaning clue from the John Wick films come in here and take care of things? Did I miss that? This little fucker has everything spit shine like he's in the Marine boot camp. That doesn't happen.
And, but by the way, clean up the entire house, but not Buzz's room.
Right.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I appreciate that as a nice fuck
and
you
by the way,
Buzz,
that's
though.
Where the Playboy was. The first place I'd go is to make sure no one saw me looking at the Playboy.
Right.
Yeah.
This movie is tolerable, but it coasts on two things. Culkin's precociousness, as well as Stern and Pesci. That is it. This story has a ton of flaws I just pointed out, and it's so many to overlook. Explain how an 8-year-old who shows zero proclivity of wreaking havoc on his family or his teachers or any kind of thing is able to suddenly John Rambo shit out of nowhere. No, don't buy that. I saw it in the theater when I was 14. I liked it.
My daughter and I watched it. Like I said, she's seven. Walked out after 45 minutes. That's a telltale sign. You know what? She didn't get up to go leave. Toy Story, Spider-Man No Way Home, and Spider-Verse. What does that tell you? Like a ton of John Hughes films, the luster has worn off. It's not as bad as the Molly Ringwald trilogy. Those are all trash. Hated them from jump. Hate them even more as an adult. This is nowhere near as good as Uncle Buck. Nowhere near as good as Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Fast.
Nowhere near as good as Ferris Bueller's Day Off. This is far better than Home Alone 2, but that's not saying much, being that film stinks. 5.5 out of 10.
Ugh. Well, and by the way, that brings up a good point. Brad, do your daughters like Home Alone?
Yeah, they like it. I don't think they like it the way that I like it.
Bingo.
Yeah. Oh, again, traitor. But but they're not, their attention's not held.
One of my daughters watched it when I was rewatching it. She was, she wasn't like, losing her mind.
Kids watch YouTube now, though. They don't even watch TV. Yeah. Like, kids' entertainment's so different.
My daughter watches plenty of movies. I mean, she watches YouTube, too. I'm not obviously going to disagree with that. But again, I know it's a family film. There's a lot of leeway you give, but man, and first of all, this is a comedy. I don't know how many times I laughed. Maybe smirked twice.
Let me ask you this, though. Yeah. How many movies can you put on for like a group of like nine people in a family to where from down the line, from the 8-year-old to the 55-year-old, everybody can sit and watch the same thing and enjoy it to some degree?
A Christmas Story.
Oh, fuck you.
Okay. So you know what I mean, though? But there's not like that. Like, usually if you put on a kid's family movie, the adults are like, this is terrible.
No, you're right.
Or you put on a more of an adult movie, the kids hate it. This movie, like, growing up, we would all watch, my dad would watch, my dad hated Christmas. He would watch this movie. Like, there's something about a movie like this that's an impressive feat to do that exactly. Did it age well? I thought it was good, but maybe I'm just too close to it.
Yeah. Let's see what the elbow patch pipe smoking dildos have to say. Critics, 5-star reviews. You can never go wrong with frequent Home Alone viewings because the laughs never end.
Ugh.
They never started. Nick, you love it. Thank you. Nick, you love this. How many times did you honest to God laugh?
Dude, I laughed out loud at like at least 4 of the times they fell. Like the fucking the gun to the head thing when he puts his head through the door, that gets
funny.
Me every time.
That's good.
Pesci going from a treehouse. Hilarious. The fucking foot on the ornaments. Like, and then when he goes, where'd you take your shoes off? There's so many good lines. Like, is it like a fucking Caddyshack level comedy? Of course not.
No,
but it's not. It's not supposed to be. So
okay. I don't like the torture porn type stuff, but I love physical humor. I'm a moron. I like the dumbest type of humor possible. And it has nothing to do with lines, but anytime Macaulay Culkin screams, and my favorite one is when the Wet Bandit's truck gets right up to his nose, and he's like, yeah. Any of that, I'm laughing. Yeah, I like that. I like that.
There are moments, but they're not, I don't think, as frequently enough. They call it a consistent comedy. Next one. The degree to which Home Alone's various components work and work exceedingly well is generally nothing short of astonishing. The charisma of Macaulay Culkin matched with the intelligent script by John Hughes makes this the definitive holiday story that is appealing to all ages. I agree with that.
I think Brad was right with Elf. I think Elf takes the shelf as like the Christmas movie that, like, I was just saying that adults and kids can all watch together.
Sir.
Like, Elf is fucking outstanding.
I had not seen a PG movie in years before Elf that I laughed at. Elf, absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
Yes. That was
great. You didn't laugh at Toy Story? That shit's hilarious.
No, Toy Story sucks.
I wish for your urethra to be invaded by a colony of fire ants.
That's how I felt when I was watching Toy Story.
Those first three films are all perfect tens. They're all perfect tens.
Love them.
They're all right.
They're perfect.
I don't hate them.
Next one. Tuned into two key elements. The joyfulness of Steven Spielberg's E.T. Not even close, asshole. Not even close. And the perennial chase of Tom and Jerry cartoons. I was chasing for laughs with Tom and Jerry for years, and I never got them, guys, which is why I'm firmly in Camp Looney Tunes. Tom and Jerry sucked. I never got that.
Yes. Anymore. Oh, yeah. No. Horrible.
Critics, 1-star reviews. A better director could have helped the film out considerably, even saved it, but even then, the script is tremendously weak by Hugh's standards or anybody else's. Anybody else's. I don't know why I said it like that. Next one, we got a reviewer with a sense of humor. Everyone involved ought to be sent home alone with no supper.
What?
That's just mean.
Zing. Home Alone is the apex, the pinnacle, the culmination of every bad bit Hughes has ever written or directed. I'm not going that far. That's a bridge too far for me. Go watch 16 Candles
I like 16 Candles is all problematic now. I mean, it's date rape. It's Asian things.
Breakfast
are not
Club.
Great
that, terrible.
But it's just gives them funny. It's a funny movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If Home Alone had limited itself to the things that possibly might happen to a forgotten 8-year-old, I think I would have liked it more. See? And that was Roger Ebert wrote that. Another Chicago boy.
Love Ebert.
Amazon 5-star reviews. We love the movie, but with all the new ways to watch movies online, some companies are getting greedy and keeping the movies and making them proprietary. And to even watch even classic movies, you now have to pay. Signed, Ralph Nader.
That makes sense.
Weird.
Huh. A lot of Amazon reviews get angry that if they're old, that you have to pay for them.
No.
So, I guess Gone with the Wind, they should be paying you to watch. Is it because it's that old?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've never seen Gone with the Wind.
It's not good. Did it in this very podcast.
I can think of a lot of things that I would like and that I believe should be free of charge. I'm not sure that an older movie is one of them. But
I agree. Yeah. Next one. 16. God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son. Anyone who believes in him will not die, but will have eternal life. God did not send his son into the world to judge the world. He sent his son to save the world through him. John 3:16. This person wrote an Amazon review and dropped the John 16. Who wrote this? The guy with the rainbow wig who sits in the first row behind home plate at baseball games?
Yes.
Next one. The Godfather is only the second best movie ever made next to this.
Wow.
That's just trolling. He doesn't believe that.
What else is there more to say? Kevin is an alpha male at a young age. He's able to engineer all sorts of contraptions and take down Chicago's most fearsome duo, the Wet Bandits. This is it. Don't get scared now. Is a philosophical quote that will stay with me for the rest of my life. Whenever I'm about to go through something stressful or probably traumatic,
philosophical.
I know no stress I can confront could ever measure up to an 8-year-old defending his family's house.
Yeah, I like this movie, and some of these I'm like, dude, come on.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You're overthinking it.
All right. If you think that was bad, here comes the insurance guy who's the fifth funniest in his office who thinks he can kill it in comedy. Ready? If you've never seen this movie, then welcome to Earth. This is what we call a moving picture. There is a subset of moving pictures that take place around a gift-giving holiday created to honor the economic system of capitalism. We worship capitalism here, and once a year we buy things for each other and we open all those gifts on one day to honor capitalism. This movie gets boring fast and we pass the time. This holiday gets boring fast, and one way we pass the time is by watching moving pictures that take place on this holiday. There are thousands of moving pictures in this subset. Most moving pictures that focus on the events of this holiday are not entertaining. Home Alone is entertaining. If you are new here and want to experience one of the best moving pictures in the subset category of honoring our capitalist holiday, then watch Home Alone.
Was that written and then translated into another language, then back into English? Who writes like that? And what a bad, just annoying take about everything.
It's a bummer.
The person you're like, we're having Thanksgiving at our house. Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazon 1-star reviews. We wanted to watch this classic as a family with our kids. 10 to 15 minutes was all we could handle before turning it off in disgust. This show had no redeeming values at all. Unless you're okay with your kids being exposed to a completely dysfunctional family where hating and degrading each other is seen as humorous, bad parenting is supposed to be applauded, and foul language, teen sexuality, and pornography are seen as normal, then I highly recommend you pick a different show. And wow. Good grief, the horrible acting, cringeworthy. Teen sexuality? Please indulge us.
Did Barbara Bush write that? What the fuck, dude?
On the surface... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Brad.
No, I'm just curious. What movie were they watching?
Yeah. Pornography. I mean, never mind. By the way, they taped the Playboy shut so Macaulay Culkin couldn't actually leaf through the Playboy. Next one. On the surface, this may seem like harmless entertainment, but this stuff like this one is one of many examples why millennials and their children are so screwed up.
By the way, remember my comment about how the movie needed a better editor? I do believe this podcast is officially longer than the movie.
We've never gone this long before. You guys were gabbing.
We're leaving no stone unturned, though. You know,
this is we're gonna have Joe Rogan come on and do 3 more hours about the same movie. So
good God, almost done. Language swearing. We had to stop watching after 5 minutes. Guys, the first 5 minutes are the credits with the John Williams score with the house lighting up. Stop lying. I don't like this movie. I don't get this movie. It's overrated. To me, it's stupid and boring. Signed, Madeleine Albright. I guess she doesn't like it
weird.
Either.
Weird. No, but she's quite the
Nick hero. Whitmer did Bill or Brad gut the sacred cow or both of them?
I think
I think you
gutted it more than, well, Bill went hard on it. I will say that I still like it. I still love. I mean, I get some of the points, but to me, I don't think it's not losing any score from where it was before this podcast.
Wow, didn't even make a dent in your in your impression of it, huh? All right. So be it. Well, guys, this was fun. Lengthy, but fun, I shall say. Brad Morris, Bill Schultz, Nick Whitmer, Kevin Goatee, we all love you. Thanks a ton for listening to us yet again for another week. And we'll see you next time on Gutting the Sacred Cow. Take care, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.